And that's translated its way all the way, I think, through there. We ran an open book company and showed everyone what we were doing financially and how things were going, right up to now, where you're kind of in the biggest expression was turning the company into one of the only 100% fully employee-owned breweries. And I think that's kind of been the final statement of, you know, this is your hard work, and it's all going to pay off for all of us.
Welcome to Learning Life.
And the thing that I've realized, from the CEO to the NFL football player to the janitor, we're our toughest critics and we're hardest on ourselves.
But you have to be willing to say and point out the things that need to be said.
The only way to grab somebody's attention is with a story.
Welcome to Learning Life with John Toda and another episode in our Vermont Local series. So for anyone in or around Vermont, you know Switchback, and you've seen their beers at bars, restaurants, and stores all over the place. Switchback Brewing Company is one of our great local breweries here in town, and since its start back in 2002, it's become one of the longtime leaders in the Burlington brewing industry. Going all the way back to the very first pint of ale served at Ake's Place on October 22, 2002, Switchback now offers over 20 different beers and has grown into one of our great local business stories here. I've got Bill Cherry and Craig Wilkinson with me today. Bill co-founded Switchback in 2002 and serves as president and brewmaster today. And Craig is the production manager, making sure all these great beers get produced and into our hands. So I'm excited to have the guys on the show today. Bill and Craig, welcome to Learning Life.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, John.
So I always like to start with our guests by asking whether you're from Vermont originally or you came here from somewhere else. And I know both of you guys have a different story. So, Bill, why don't you kick us off by telling us, how did you get to Vermont?
Yeah, so I started off life in Michigan and spent most of my childhood, you know, growing up in the Midwest. And kind of, I'll go to the yada, 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 started working, wanted to be in the brewing industry, and went out to California to University of California, Davis, got my master's degree in beer brewing. Everybody always smiles when I say that. And worked in Kansas City for Boulevard Brewing Company, and basically found my way back to Vermont by accident, in that, you know, I found some work up here and was trying to get back north, because, you know, I started in Michigan and I was finding that the southern heat and humidity didn't suit me real well. And so I took a chance and got into Vermont, and the rest is history, because I hit a point where the job I was working was no longer. That company failed, and I decided I knew where I wanted to live. So I created my own job by creating this brewery.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And Craig, tell us your story. I think you're actually from Vermont, right?
Yep. Kind of a typical Vermont story, where I grew up on a dairy farm, and then, you know, with everything that happened, that went under. But I went to college, got an economics degree, stayed in the area, and while I was in college, kind of worked at some factories during the summer and kind of helped pay for my way through. And then got out, did some inventory management sort of desk jobs, and then transitioned to, you know, quit that to work at a brewery. And then, you know, inventory management and all that kind of fun stuff transitioned over, even though I started out just flipping kegs, it eventually paid off.
And now, Bill, going all the way back, I know there's a long story of, you know, kind of your co-founding of Switchback and what it's become today. Now, along the way, I think you served this dual role of president and brewmaster. What role do you spend more of your time doing, or which one do you really enjoy more? And maybe tell us a little bit about those roles, particularly the brewmaster role, which I think most people would be most intrigued by.
Okay, so if we go through the whole period of it, in the early days, I was brewmastering mostly, quite happily so. Nowadays that we've, you know, kind of gotten to where we've gotten, I'm presidenting mostly. And and in terms of, I knew this from the beginning and I can attest to it, is running the business sucks and making beer is really great. So I do miss being able to spend almost all my hours just kind of worrying about my craft and whatnot. But there's obviously huge rewards for what we've been able to do here and the 30 plus employees that make up this company. So, you know, I'm very proud of that. And I'm not a young man anymore. So you can only keep hauling grain bags around for so long before you need to find a desk job.
And now, Craig, tell our audience the role of production manager. I would think most people probably, unless they're in, you know, working in a brewing company or around it in some way, they may not be familiar with that role. In your company, what is the production manager? What are you doing on a daily basis?
I started the role probably 5 years where there 5 years ago where there was a little bit of a employee drain, and so I kind of stepped into a role that somebody else had, and so at that point it was kind of a lot of hiring and training and kind of being hands-on with everything on the floor. And then eventually enough of the people that I hired and trained kind of have stayed on, and they're taking on more and more. And as opposed to, you know, 5 years ago where I knew mostly everything going on, now it's trying to support the pieces that are doing a lot of the boots on the ground work, making sure everybody has the, you know, the moving pieces they need, the right products they need, like everything. So kind of being aware of everybody's job, giving everybody the time that they need to do their jobs, and being there to kind of troubleshoot issues that come up. And so it's kind of transitioned over the years, but now it definitely runs a lot more smoothly, where less of it's on me and more of it's more supporting people rather than being hands-on with every machine.
Yeah, and I would imagine there's just so many moving parts that go into the creation and production and then distribution of a beer, particularly when you guys have so many of them. And when you think about that, I think for a lot of people, the interesting side of this is kind of the artistic aspect of the brewing business. And so, Bill, I want to ask you, because you kind of have those two, you wear those two hats where you're running the business side of it, but then at heart, I think you're kind of an artist, and what you create are these beers, and you've done that for so long. Do you see that as the creativity, the art side of the business, and how has that changed over the years for you?
Well, yeah, I do. Brewing is one of the great marriages of science and art, I think. I would probably say that quite often winemaking is a little stronger on the art and brewing's a little stronger on the science. But they're both there. We have to manipulate all these things. But if you know the science, then you can apply your art, if that makes any sense. And so there's a great deal of enjoyment. There's a lot of talk, and this is kind of a quick story I used to get asked all the time, was how I came up with our flagship Switchback Ale flavor and how many brews did it take to, you know, get it. And I would explain I didn't do any brews. I just formulated it in my head. And everyone gives me this funny look, but I've had a really good reception where sometimes there's, say, a chef in the crowd, and I say think of it as a great chef who's making a sauce, a new sauce. They know their craft so well that whatever they come up with is going to be just about what they wanted, and all they're going to do is tweak it. You know, maybe it needs a little more salt or something, and that's about it. Well, that's kind of what happens with what I do is up there in my head, I'm actually like formulating and saying, you know, I'd really like to get a little caramel flavor, but not too strong. I don't want it burnt sugar. I think if I use this percent of this particular specialty malt, that might do it. And I'll actually roll that around in my head and go, you know, I think that's going to be too much. I think I need to back off on that. So it's hard to explain, but it's a lot of fun.
It's so interesting how you operate and how you come up with beer ideas. And I know today, as we were talking earlier too, that you even have more to play with. It's not just hops. There's so many different types of hops that you're kind of bringing together to create a beer. How many different ingredients are you working with nowadays?
Boy, never counted them. You know, there's dozens and dozens of types of grain and malt that you can use. And then when you get to the hops, there's actually literally hundreds of varieties that you can play with. But there's people's favorites, and there's almost always a good reason why they're favorites. It's always interesting. If it's a hop you haven't heard of and it's supposed to be pretty good, and you find out it's actually been around 10 years, it's probably more of a niche product than the ones you have.
And it's so interesting. There's so many different ingredients involved in the making of a beer, so many different people collaborating around it. So, Craig, on the production side, how much of your role today is really involved in the supply and demand side of really making sure that you're producing the right amount of product and getting it out to the places that need it the most?
That's less and less of my role now, because everything kind of gets driven by sales, ultimately. Not to say that what we do is, you know, coming from sales, but somebody goes to the store, they buy a 12-pack. Well, we need to replenish that 12-pack. We need to kind of anticipate how many 12 packs we're going to make. And day to day, we have Justin, who's been taking on this role more and more, and he's great at it. We can kind of anticipate that. But during kind of the shutdown, everything was crazy because of everything was week to week and almost day to day. We weren't sure what we were going to make, what machine we were going to turn on, because we weren't sure what the orders were going to be coming in and, you know, what shipments were going to go out. So now that we're able to have inventory, we were playing it close. The distributors are playing it close. But now there's faith in the world that we're able to kind of have beer in our cooler. The distributors are having beer in their cooler. You know, stores are ordering again and everything's, I can schedule out the next, you know, month with a pretty good certainty because we know a good idea what's going to sell. But for a while there, nobody wanted to, you know, they wanted to replace that 112 pack and not kind of have an inventory. And that went, you know, all the way down the distribution chain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting times we're living through. And it's obviously nice to see everything getting back to normal. And I know, Bill, in the conversations that we've had, I know, and Craig, you even mentioned a couple times just now that the team has grown over the years, and there's so many employees in these different roles that are doing the things that you guys don't have to do any longer and really keep this business growing. And I think one of the themes in a lot of these interviews we have is, how do you attract the right talent to your company here in Burlington? And then how do you retain them? How do you keep them connected? Bill, so for you, what's kind of been your long-term strategy to really convert this into that type of business where your employees are tied to it and staying with the company for the long term to help grow it to the next level?
I guess I've always had a sense of wanting to involve everybody into the brewery from the very beginning. And so I think I was kind of well known for, you know, in the early days when I was out on the floor working right next to everybody. And if anyone ever said, so, you know, why are we doing this? They learned to maybe not ask those kinds of questions because they'd get about a half hour conversation with me where I was like explaining all the details of why that particular ingredient or that particular temperature on the mash profile for the beer, what it was doing to that beer. But by the same token, we would, you know, go through and have open discussions about just a new name for a beer or a new label look and say, what do you think about this and how do you feel? And that's translated its way all the way, I think, through there. We ran an open book company and showed everyone what we were doing and financially and how things were going right up to now where, you know, kind of in the biggest expression was turning the company into one of the only 100% fully employee-owned breweries. And I think that's kind of been the final statement of, you know, this is your hard work and it's all going to pay off for all of us.
Yeah, I think that's such a fascinating story to switch back. And I know you did it, I guess it was probably 3 or 4 years ago now. How have you seen the change in the company? Did it have a big impact in just the way that everybody operates now that they know that they've got ownership in the organization?
I'll pass this off in a second to Craig because he's, you know, one of the new employee owners. But I would say that in part, there was a little bit because the company was kind of being run pretty openly already, that part of the transition was pretty same. But I think what started to change for me was that I certainly, as a president, as I'm making decisions, started really making a conscious thing of the fact that my decisions were going to affect these people for, you know, for their entire careers at this point. And to the point where I found it rather enjoyable to, in a meeting, if it was a big long-term decision of a direction the company might be going, just to kind of smile and look at everybody else and say, I'm retiring in another 10 years. So you guys should make the decision, not me. and kind of throw it in their lap. So what do you think, Craig?
I think it's had a big impact. You know, we're a company where kind of Bill's created this culture, you know, hard work and everything done. And I think we've kept that through the ESOP, but people who have currently worked here are excited about, you know, one, having ownership of it, having a say in the company. We have an ESOP committee, you know, that kind of gets to go to, say, the managers of, like, I think we should do this, or say, like, what we want to represent as our cultural values of, like, things we should support you know, there's lots of ways people can have a say. And not only that, just like people thinking of it as a long-term thing, even, you know, looking when we hire somebody, you have to think about, is this somebody that I want to spend the rest of my life with? Because chances are I'm going to be working with them for the next 30 years because people don't leave. And so, you know, making sure that when people come in, interview, they talk to almost, you know, all the production crew. It's a great place to be. People love working here. And it's one of those things where every step of the way, it's what's going to carry us through to the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years into the future. And I feel like everybody here has this kind of long sort of way of thinking about it. And I think the ESOP is part of that.
Yeah, I think it's a great point that you mentioned, too. It's that it really makes everyone in the company think long term about every decision they make. And even like you said, to the point of hiring someone, because when it's employee owned like that, you do expect that that team that you bring in and pull together, you're going to work together for a very long time. And so all the decisions are made with a longer view. And I think it's great. I think it's such a nice success story for, you know, obviously to build the business up to the point that you have, but then to turn it into an employee owned company like this is so cool. Bill, for anybody listening who's an entrepreneur building up a business, particularly here in our local community, who is listening to this story and thinking, yeah, maybe that's an avenue for me to go down to really build the right culture and retain my best people long term, and to have, like you said, a retirement plan and an exit strategy for yourself that ensures the company is run properly for the long term and your brand is protected. Do you have any lessons learned or best practices or something for another entrepreneur? Just make sure you think about these few things and consider them if this is going to be a route you might go down.
Boy, yeah, you ask tough questions, but I think, I think, you know, and in some ways, being 4 years into this, I can reflect on the fact that I was making a conscious decision to not be separated from my company. I wanted to stay involved. And like anything, that can be a double-edged sword, right? We had built up quite a company, and back 4 years ago, it was prime time to sell to big breweries and make a lot of money. And I made a choice not to do that, in that I didn't think it would be fun to sit around with a big bank account and not have anything to do. But that being said, you know, it's a big risk to say, well, life will be good and retirement will be good as long as this company survives. And so there's that little extra pressure. And there's definitely times as an ex-owner that you're having a lousy day at work and you're like, boy, I could just be sitting on a beach right now. Why am I doing this? But that's, you know, I would definitely tell anybody to think that through. You know, because you're maintaining your stress level where you had an opportunity to kind of alleviate it. But for me, it's to be able to still come into work every day and do the one thing I love the most, which is not only making and creating beers, but it's running a crew that is dedicated to getting it out and getting those beers out as good as they can be each and every day. And that's kind of what we've built in our culture here, is to kind of follow that is not just to be making something that sells, but to be making something that we all are personally proud of.
Yeah, I think it's so refreshing to hear that from an entrepreneur too, is that just not looking for a big ticket exit, but really thinking about long-term what's best for your baby, you know, that you built up over the, you know, this long period of time and the team that's been so committed to it. So it's nice. And I think it also kind of plays to the side that you're a creative at heart and you're really passionate about creating these beers and working with the team to make those come to life. And you still get to enjoy that. I guess the stress goes along with it for a little longer for you, but you get to share it now with the others like Craig.
Yeah. And I can tell you, you know, and I think we touched upon this once, but, you know, when I went through the possibilities of, you know, you could bring in some venture capitalist money, but then you'd be under pressure to, you know, get them paid off or you just completely sell. But this is kind of like trying to, you know, have your cake and eat it too. Is that the right phrase? And in that, while I'm still younger, I am cashing out, so to speak. So, you know, I was able to do a house renovation, right? But at the same point, I'm still completely like locked in and involved with my company. So for me, that was it didn't make sense to, and that makes sense, but it wouldn't have been as nice to wait until I'm 70 years old and then had a big paycheck. I'd rather have it when I'm in my 50s and can use it for, you know, more fun things.
More fun than making beers. I don't know. It's tough to beat. So, Craig, my question for you, so for this kind of transition now, becoming one of the owners in the company and having that longer vision, do you look at, and with that, your ESOP team, are you looking at the craft beer industry that's really kind of blown up so much in this last decade and where it's headed in the future, where you see, you know, kind of the plan for Switchback and how that fits with kind of those, you know, mainstream, really large brands out there? How do you guys see the future going? Where do you want to take Switchback?
I don't know. It's I guess, too early to say anything, but there's definitely a pride in what we do, and what we do is make great beer. And so there's definitely internal conflict. I shouldn't say conflict. There's definitely a strong argument against, like, oh, we should make a bunch of products that we personally don't think would be good, but try to make them for the masses. I don't think people, you know, necessarily feel like that's something that they want their company to do. Don't want to wake up every day and kind of push that. And I think there's this feeling of we're pride in what we do. And I think that's kind of steered us in the direction that, you know, especially with Bill, he's a brewmaster, you know, just pride making great beer is what we've been doing. Hopefully it's what we do in the future. And it's crazy that we're sitting talking about like the success story of a brewery when it's a brewery. Like I remember my first day, like it's a kid in a candy store, like just coming to work every day. It's like in itself, it's like a successful company, but it's also just like a great, great experience to be able to kind of spend a career working, you know, working with beer, working in a brewery. That I think itself like helps drive people to want to stay and want to work.
And John, I would also point out, you've mentioned this about, you know, it the ESOP creates kind of a long-term view, and we've really addressed that too in terms of our size. It's like, how big do we want to get? And that answer can change at any time, and everybody, you know, and everybody understands that. But we also can look at it and say, how does it affect us on a day-to-day basis? You know, we want to come in here, and do we want to, you know, just really be struggling because we've decided that we needed to sell beer all the way down the Eastern Seaboard? Or, you know, do we want to work on some new products and maybe some high-end, higher-margin products where we make really good profits off them and they're really special? And we do things like, we make more smoked beers than any brewery in the world right now, and it's just because. So there's, like I said, the decision can always be made to go run off and try to do more, but there is that conscious effort to be like, what do we want to do on a day-to-day basis that covers both things? And it is in everybody's interest to both. I'm not just a worker that wants, you know, a fun job. I'm also an owner that wants a good retirement payoff, and balancing that out. And I think that's what the ESOP does, is bring all that together. So everybody's conscious of the tug of those two things.
Yeah. I love that distinction too. Because that's the hardest part, is that, of course, creating beers from scratch and working in a brewery, there's the science and the art of it. And it's one of those really unique, awesome jobs that you could have. But like you said, you're also balancing what's commercially viable, what's going to generate, you know, good returns for the company as well. And I think Switchback's done a really nice job of that. Obviously, you see Switchback beers everywhere, and, you know, to a certain extent. So you've kind of balanced that commercial side of it, but then also staying true to, like you said, Craig, making the beers that you guys would love to drink and that, you know, are something you can be proud of. And to that end, the last thing I want to ask you, what do you have coming? Is there, and has it changed the way that you are coming up with your next generation of beers? Are you still the one in charge as the brewmaster coming up with every new beer, Bill?
I am still the one in charge, technically, and I do still come up with beers. Although, like I said, mine tend to be smoked right now. But yeah, no, actually, we have a big release that's happening in July. It's a fun story in that one of my brewers, Morgan, she works in our little pilot brewery. She likes to experiment, and she brought in something she was working on where she made a big, I don't know why so big, but over 9% alcohol double IPA. That's all grain, didn't have to use any sugar to kind of pump the alcohol up. She made it happen. That was her personal challenge, was she wanted to do it with nothing but the grains and not kind of using the easier path of dropping a bag of sugar in there. And she presented it to me, and it just tastes fantastic. And it's really unusual in that how well it hides its booziness and how drinkable it is. It's a little bit dangerous. And I got a hold of that, and I said, you know, that fits into our portfolio right now. Is we don't have a double IPA. I really love it, and challenged her and said, you know what, this is your beer, and I'm going to stay out of it, and you are going to develop this further. And so obviously, I work with her and help and make comments, but it's all her baby, and we're creating an entire family of beers around this, of double IPAs that are all Morgan double IPAs, where she's developing her hop characteristics for it. And, you know, and she's going to have the tropical juicy and the citrus juicy and dank ones. And the very first one is called Octane Cat. And even that shows, represents that this is a new thing for Switchback. This is Morgan has gone rogue and is taking us in a whole new direction here and having fun with it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And so for this episode's coming out in July. So anybody who's listening to this, where can they get it right now? Do they have to come to the brewery to get it in the early days?
Got to come to the brewery. That's the only place right now. As of August, we'll probably have a little bit of distribution. It'll be extremely limited because we're still learning how to make it and getting everything going. But it'll be on tap at the brewery, and Craig is going to can some up, I think. Right, Craig?
Yep, tomorrow we're canning some.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is worth a trip over to the brewery to pick up some of the brand new Octane Cat. So that's awesome. And smoked beers. I haven't tried a smoked beer. So that seems to be something that is worth a trip in just to experience that as well.
It's the beer style you don't realize how much you actually like.
All right, that's awesome. Hey, well, for anybody who's listening, check out Switchback Brewery. Go and pick up Octane Cat or some of these new smoked beers and see how you like them. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. It's such an awesome story. I love just the way you built the business, but then also, Bill, kind of working with Craig and the other employee owners to make this evolution really awesome. Such a great story. Thank you, guys. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, John.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for being here each week. As you know, we have a new episode of Learning Life Local that comes out every week. So wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe, leave us comments. We love to hear from you guys. And until our next episode, happy learning. Hey everyone, John Tota here. I want to thank you for tuning into the show each week. We love our Learning Life community and are so grateful for your support. We'd appreciate it if you would take a minute to rate us and write a review for Learning Life wherever you're listening right now. Your ratings and comments help new people find the show so we can keep growing our community and bringing great interviews on the topics you care most about.